Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, number 621 for comics originally released on July 3rd, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Lois Lane number 1. This is part 1 of a 12-issue maxi series. It's written by Greg Rucka. Is this part of the Event Leviathan stuff or not? I was a little unclear on that.
I was unclear from the solicit, but there's hints to Superman stuff that's going on currently in Superman Action Comics in here. So it might vaguely tie into it, but it seems separate at the same time.
Yeah, so maybe we'll find out later. There were a couple of things about this story I found, honestly, a little confusing.
Okay, interesting. And I want to hear what you thought was confusing. And I think this comic's going to be very... It's a great writer, but I think it'll be controversial, too.
Yeah, I can see some of that. I think Rucka was the right choice for this.
I agree. I love Rucka's writing, so... Anything that he writes, I'm going to read it.
Yeah, but I think this is playing in kind of his wheelhouse and stuff, because we're getting a solid kind of newspaper journalist kind of a story, honestly, the likes of which we haven't seen in mainstream comics for quite some time.
Very true. This was, it's better almost than what we're seeing in Action Comics, and Action Comics has been very good.
Yeah. It's very much in line with aspects of that. You mentioned how it was referencing some of the current events and stuff. They reference, John and Lois having come back from space and whatnot.
Yep. The kiss also.
Yes, the kiss, and how that's having ramifications for both Lois, Clark, and Superman.
Yep.
I was a little confused because the story starts out at the Drake Hotel, which they, clarifies in Chicago, which I was pretty much thinking, but I appreciate the confirmation.
Yep.
Where Lois has been kind of, living for a while now.
Yes.
Well, if she's living there, and Superman's doing his Superman thing, as well as being Clark Kent and stuff, who's keeping an eye on John?
That's true. I didn't think about that. He's nowhere to be seen.
He's a teenager now, so maybe it's not as big of a deal. I can almost let that slide.
But still, that just seems kind of odd.
Yeah, because we've got stuff going on in obviously, Chicago, where Lois is. Metropolis, where the Daily Planet is and such, and even some stuff happening in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, this is almost like Lois divorced from being a mother.
Yeah, she's definitely the absentee mom, although everybody seems okay with that.
Yeah, it's not even referenced or alluded to in here at all.
Well, again, they did mention John a little, so we
yes.
at least acknowledge his existence.
Exactly, yeah, when they talk about him being in space, yeah.
But when she's actually... in D.C. at one point, I'm like, wait, she's living out of a hotel in Chicago. How does this work?
I know. She's turned into like a vagabond of some kind, living out of hotels. And that's kind of weird, too, just because of what's been going on in Action and Superman. Something's off between the two books.
Well, they'd actually set it up over there. She'd been living out of the Drake Hotel in there.
Yes. But going here, yeah, very weird.
And I'm okay with her not living in Metropolis, although I agree that's odd in and of itself. But how is she not only not living in Metropolis, but living in Chicago and attending press conferences at the White House? That's the commute just seems, for Clark, not a big deal, but for Lois.
Exactly. And a reporter, they don't have a private jet where they're flying down for the day and coming back. So they must have some really cheap airfare or I don't know. That's very weird.
Now, at one point when she's having that meeting in the parking garage.
Yes, where it got very like the 60s or 70s with Deep Throat.
Yeah. At that point, I'm thinking, okay, coat, fedora, can't really make out the face. I'm thinking it's the Question.
That's what I was thinking, too.
When later we actually get clarification on who I presume that character was, which is now over in Moscow.
Yes.
Again, travel time, not factored into the story.
Just magically there.
It does indeed seem to be the Question, but not the Question I was thinking.
Oh, there's a different Question?
Well, there's the classic one that was Vic Sage and stuff that is from old school comics, because this is one of the Carlton characters.
With the question mark on his face, right?
Not with the question mark on his face, just a Blank face, no features.
Blank face. Okay, that this is the one. When I saw my question, okay, what's the other one?
Well, in DC continuity, after a question had come in, had a couple of a year run and gone away and stuff for a while, and I forget if it was part of the 52 weekly series or somewhere in there, they had Renee Montoya, who had been a cop in Gotham, take over the mantle.
Oh, okay, all right. And I was not aware of that.
That's who I think this is.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha. But at least I got the reference to the question. So mm-hmm. I was like, I was thinking that's who that was. And I was like, okay, because they don't come out and say it in here.
That is one of those things where they could have been a little clearer. But again, I could be wrong. It could be the Vixage one, which is kind of what I thought we were getting over in Event Leviathan. But they haven't really clarified this character's status quo in this continuity.
Yeah. And without clarifying it, and this being a number one, and originally when I was looking at this, I was thinking it was a tie into Event Leviathan where they have that face masking technology. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, nah, I think this might be this question person that I kind of vaguely know about.
It's a little odd to be using a character like this so much in two or three issues lately, because we've seen it in seen a question, if not the question, because I don't know, maybe there's more than one running around here in Event Leviathan and in Action Comics.
Very weird
to not have really firmly reestablished the character. Kind of odd, kind of a little annoying.
Yeah, definitely. Now, overall, what did you think of this? It looked like, you know, Rucka, he seems to really enjoy writing stories and telling stories about very strong, independent women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you have here. Everywhere from, and there's a lot of topics he deals with here. You know, the way that, you know, even the way she comes on to Clark when she gets home versus the way you'd see it vice versa if you're reading Superman.
Overall, I like his take on Lois. I think he's always had a good mindset for how the character should be and how he writes the character.
I agree. Yeah.
She's strong. She's smart. Maybe not the best speller, but, you know, who cares? She just plows through stuff. She's like the, you know, irresistible force or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That it makes me like her more, reading mm-hmm. Rucka.
I think he did a really good job. There was definitely one or two things here that were kind of ripped from the headlines.
Yes.
Which I'm okay with, and I like this having that kind of awareness of what's going on in society and aspects like that.
It makes it feel real to me.
It does, in a way that a lot of superhero comics, frankly, often don't.
Yeah, that's what I really enjoyed about this, because by making it relevant to what we're seeing and hearing today, and, you know, even with the press secretary and how that plays out, I was just like, I felt like I was watching a hardcore female reporter with this interesting life in real time, mm-hmm. you know, like right now, this story happening today. So, and that's tough to do because so many times it's so many degrees further and they may allude to stuff, but this is like right on the nose but I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a couple of things in terms of, you know, people literally, you know, globetrotting or whatever it seemed like that were a little annoying. And it's funny because the rest of the story is so grounded in a reality. Yes, we've got Superman here. We've got the question and other, you know, superhero aspects, but in a way that's much more believable. This is almost, I don't want to say a TV movie kind of a take on the property or whatever, but it's the kind of thing that we don't often get, or don't get often enough, I should say, in comics.
I agree. Yeah, this was definitely one of the better reads I had from my comics this week. And I haven't read hardly any of them because I just received my shipment today as we're recording on Monday. But I did read a few books, and this so far has been at the top of my pile.
What did you think of the art?
The art was okay with me. I didn't mind it at all. It's a little bit different. It reminded me, I'm trying to think of what it would remind me of. It almost reminds me of something you would see over in his book over Image with Lark. I'm trying to think of the name
Lazarus?
Of the book. Lazarus, yeah. Oh, it's a little rougher. It almost looks like something I'd see to Image.
I see where you're coming from there. To me, it's a little bit rougher, and I don't know how much of this is the artist or the colorist, but there are a lot of pages where it's really dark.
Very, very, very dark. Yeah, I would agree with you there. And that played it, yeah, it made it feel really ominous, the book. And I don't know if that he was doing that intentionally or what.
I'm not sure. And it was something that in a couple of places, like there was in the Moscow scene, there was an inset panel.
Yeah, I was literally on that page. I was going to ask you, what in the heck is that?
I don't know.
Me neither. It's circled there. They're like pointing it out. I'm like, this must have a meaning. And I kept looking at going, what in the heck is that? Is that like a finger? Is that like,
there's something we're supposed to notice there. And I noticed there's something we're supposed to notice. I couldn't tell you what it is.
Yeah. I was like, is that supposed to be like a hand with a finger tapping? Or is it like a little hammer thing? So it was that part I was left baffled. Because I'm like, it's supposed to mean something. He's literally drawing a box around it. Look here. And I have no clue what's going on.
As if maybe it's the question tapping him on the shoulder to get his attention in one direction while she goes somewhere else?
That's my best guess. No.
Maybe?
Maybe. But yeah, that was, I guess, a downside. The art is definitely not the best in here. And it seemed a little more, like I said, image-like. It didn't seem like a typical DC book. It almost seems like an indie book.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I did like, you mentioned the typos that she had in there, mm-hmm. and he really, you know, went on with the editing and speaking with her editor, and I was just like, that's so funny, because I was literally reading this, and then you go to the Slack channel where people are pointing out typos and, you know, double typings of certain things in comics, where it seems like editors are completely missing today, and this is totally hitting that nail right on the head. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, because wasn't there also a comment of, what do? Turn the spell checker off?
Exactly, yeah.
It's like, no, I just keep typing till it gives up.
Just keep going. So it was really funny. He's like, yeah, you definitely need an editor. And comic books need editors, too, because there's so much stuff that still gets through the cracks.
Yeah. Overall, I thought this was some really good stuff. Again, there are a couple of things I could nitpick, and obviously have nitpicked, like the travel stuff.
Yeah.
But I like the interaction between Lois and Clark, Lois and Perry. There's an aspect of what they're doing here that's, it's a fun change of pace, and it's something that I'd like to see more of in the comics.
Yeah, this is a book that made me like the character more after having read this than before I went into it, and I'm on board for the whole thing. I was really happy with this.
Yeah, same here. I pretty much expected it to be solid writing, because I mean, Rucka usually delivers, and I think this is kind of in his sweet spot. Strong female lead character, hard-hitting story, and Rucka's the type to really think through the story.
Yes, very much so.
He doesn't just do a roller coaster ride. There's some actual meat on the bones of the plot and the characterization, which I love.
Yeah, and Rucka's a guy, like I said, I love almost everything he writes, that I go back and I buy the hardcover. I'm going to buy all the hardcovers for Lazarus. And this is something that they printed a hardcover. I imagine it's going to be amazing at the end.
Yeah, I would think so too. I'm going to go with a B+ on this. Definitely recommend it.
I liked it a little bit more than you. I went with A-, and I think everyone should read this. It's a good read.
I was close to that A-. I couldn't quite give it to it.
Yeah. Well, there was a few things. It was like the weird thing, the square in there. And then, like you said, the art was a little bit muddled, a little bit darker. And just a few things here and there, but overall, I just loved it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth people's time, and I hope people check it out.
Me too.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds good.
This is Uncanny X-Men number 21, and this is not the final issue of the series.
When we were picking this, I thought this was the final issue.
The solicit I have in front of me starts with, "It all ends here."
Exactly, and I saw that, and I was like, hey, this has been a good run. Maybe this will be a good one to read because it's the end of this before we go into the Hickman stuff. And then you get to the end and are like, stay tuned for issue 22. I was like, what in the heck?
Exactly. Same here.
Didn't this just happen to us a little while back?
It did on Amazing Spider-Man, where we didn't get the finale of Hunted, I think it was.
Yeah, it's like deja vu all over again. These solicits are not matching up with what's happening.
I think some of it might be, and I'd need to double check this, but if they do two issues in the month, and they've got the one page in the Marvel previews, they list both and only give one blurb.
That probably is what happened, and that's frustrating because I was like, hey, let's end with a bang and see where Rosenberg leaves off with his Uncanny X-Men run, and then womp womp, it's not the end.
It's not the end, and honestly, it was not a great issue.
I would agree with you there. I was kind of disappointed with it.
I mean, the cover is got some issues.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with Ileana's sword there, and not the best face for Cyclops I've seen.
Yeah. It's definitely rough. And Logan, his mouth looks unhinged, like he's some kind of viper.
Like he's laughing or something, almost.
Yeah, like what? Like a psychopath.
It's easy for me to knock an artist. This guy does way better than I would have, and I'll freely admit that. But
this is the cover of the Uncanny X-Men. Come on, guys.
Exactly. This could and should be a flagship title over at Marvel. I'm also not too keen on the habit I guess this writer has had of starting with basically a blank first page with a caption box.
Yes, that's a blank page. And I'm sure him and the artist get paid for this caption. And then you flip and then you have a full page. Here's the characters. And then you flip and you have a full page of here's what's going on. And then you flip. So I'm like three flips into it. And now we get to the story.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a waste.
They're burning space that I don't feel they should be.
Me too. So I haven't enjoyed that either.
Now, as a single issue, I mean, this reads okay, but not great. It's the middle chapter of an arc.
Exactly. So that's why it was kind of weird, because I got in here and there's a little bit more setting of the table for next issue, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole situation with Emma Frost was set up in the previous issue, and I guess it'll resolve next issue.
Yep. And it was not resolved here. And there was a big change with what's his name? Cyclops. Not Cyclops. I can't think of his name. Cyderox, the guy. The Juggernaut.
Juggernaut, yeah.
Yeah, I can't.
Huge thing there that came out of nowhere, and it feels like a mistake, because that's the sort of thing you have to roll back.
Exactly. So that happened, and I was just like, wow. And then I was like, got to the end, and I was like, okay, this isn't the last issue. But even at the next issue, that doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's very easily rolled back.
Doesn't matter. To me, this reminds me of a storyline they did in the original Suicide Squad comic. And by original, I mean when they did the villain take, not the original. Let me clarify that. But in the 90s, when they did a Suicide Squad series that ran 60-some-odd issues, at one point later in the run, they start an issue killing off the Atom.
Oh, okay.
And you're like, what the hell? This character's never even shown up in this book.
And now he's dead.
And there was enough pushback that they wound up reverting it.
Yeah, and Hickman's coming in, he's like basically saying this is going to change kind of everything for the X-Men, and it's almost pushing the whole franchise in a different direction, and I'm hoping this is fixed, because I like the character.
Yeah, the character of Juggernaut's gone in a number of different directions, and I really liked what they did during the Malibu era.
I would agree. I remember that, and I liked it fondly.
They've done some fun stuff with the character, and this seemed to move in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I would agree.
Now, when we get to the scene where we've got Emma Frost kind of walking down the stairs and whatnot,
yeah,
there's that panel at the bottom with her and Hope.
Okay.
And at this point, I'm thinking, you know, I really like Greg Land as an artist, and some of this is really nice, but some of it not so much. And then I'm flipping back to the credits, and it's not Greg Land. It's Salvador LaRocca.
Oh, yeah. It does look kind of Greg Landish in that.
A couple of panels, it looks exactly Greg Landish.
Very weird.
And that, and I mean in that almost over-referenced magazine art style.
So I wonder if LaRocca's going in that direction. And it does, I thought it was Greg Land just by looking at it. And now, like you said, I went back to the front, it's not him. Huh.
LaRocca is a better artist than this. This is not his best work.
Yeah, I don't know if he was hurried or rushed or who knows, but yeah, this does not look like his work. And Greg Land's not a bad artist. It's just when I see his art and with the stuff that's, you know, been said about him in the past, you see the referencing when you're looking at his issues.
You see the referencing, and some of the stuff, even with the referencing, is really good. His work on Sojourn and some of the other stuff at Cross Gem was great. There are other times it's a little still, lifeless, and over-referenced. Here, that one panel at the bottom definitely has that, but if you go to the panels above it, on the right there,
yeah,
it's like it's by a different artist.
Very much so. Hmm.
So I was a little disappointed with that.
Yeah, it's very inconsistent in there. And then the story itself was like, I don't know, it didn't hook me. The Uncanny X-Men, it started off really good for about the first arc or two,
mm-hmm.
but it seems to have been deteriorating near the end. This whole story.
I would agree with it, and this issue got very much into just mutant bickering.
Yes, lots of bickering and lots of internal conflict, and then it ended really weird. I don't know if that's going to play into Hickman's run, but the ending in it could be something really cool, or it's going to be something that has to just be wiped out, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to say. There were a couple of characters they pulled in out of, it felt like nowhere.
Yeah.
One or two we just hadn't seen in a while. It's like, you know, I vaguely remember there was a character called that, but you know, it seemed to be a plot point that they just needed to explain something away or whatever.
Yeah, I would agree. The one thing I did like on the art, I really liked the demon creature in here. I thought he was really cool looking.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my one thing. I was like, some of the girls, the faces, the photo reference ones were very pretty, and this demon was really cool looking. I want to see more of this demon. I'm just kidding by saying that. He doesn't say much. He just makes noises, but it was really kind of cool.
She, actually.
Or she. Yeah, I apologize.
they had some moments that had some really good art and stuff. Other panels, not so much. But this felt like there was just so much going on. It kind of had that shock and awe storytelling versus, you know, really solid and compelling plot line.
I would agree. And I don't know if that's because, like I said, this title started off strong and I was really enjoying it. It was like the only X book that I was really kind of into. And then, like I said, it started to decline. And I don't know if that's because Hickman came in. They said, hey, you need to wrap it up. And he's just cramming ideas that he had into a shortened version. But it just seems the pacing's off and it just seems like it's being rushed. And I don't know. And I guess it's for Hickman. It's got to be for Hickman.
I would hope they gave Rosenberg enough time to wrap stuff up gracefully or whatever, but I agree, it does feel rushed. It does feel like it's, you got until 22 and that's it. And he may have only found that out, you know, an issue or two back.
Yeah, exactly. Because it seems like some of the ideas in here, like the thing with Juggernaut could have been like something building up and that's like a cliffhanger on an issue. The thing that happens on this should have been another issue. And, you know, talking about that. So it almost seems like there's two or three plots kind of condensed into one issue here.
Yeah, but there's also a trend this writer has had of trying to end on a big moment, a big reveal of what will happen next or whatever.
Yeah.
So it may not be rushed. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to say, and unless the writers tell you, which they're not going to tell you, we'll never know. We can just guess and speculate, you know.
Yeah. It was a decent read, kind of disappointing overall. And I feel the next issue kind of has to explain a couple of things that happened here.
I would agree. And I'm kind of disappointed that we didn't review the last issue.
Well, certainly that was our intent.
We did intend to do it, and we read it, and I guess this one just didn't have a solicit.
I am getting frustrated with that sort of thing, because what we do is we look at the list of stuff that Diamond's got coming out in 2 weeks. We have the cover, we've got the solicit, and oh, that one seems like a good one. And the way Marvel seems to be soliciting their books, it's not working in their favor with our reviews.
Definitely. And I remember I looked at this one. I was like, hey, this is the end of the Uncanny X-Men before Hickman. Maybe a good thing to review. And you're like, yeah, I've been enjoying it. Let's see. And then, like you said, womp womp, not the end.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
I was disappointed with this. It had some moments here and there where the art was good. The story was okay. Other moments, not so much. They at least tried to do a lot in here, so I applaud the effort.
Yep.
But I certainly would not give this to somebody thinking it will make them an X-Men fan.
No, it may drive them away.
Yeah. But it had enough decent stuff that I went with a C+ on this.
Yeah, believe it or not, me too. I went with a C+, and I kind of gave it... I almost went with a C, and I was like, I feel like he's being rushed. But not knowing, I'm kind of speculating on that. So I went ahead and gave him the C+ because I think that he's kind of being pushed to another book and, hey, we got someone else coming along. Time to wrap it up.
I think this is the kind of issue, though, that if you were to cherry pick panels, you could basically give people subsets of the issue and they would think, oh my God, the art's amazing, or oh my God, the art's atrocious.
Basically by picking them. Yeah, and that's so weird because it's the same artist. There's no other artist listed. So it's like, you know, sometimes you have three or four artists listed and they're filling in because someone's missing a deadline and they need to rush it along. But that was just weird how inconsistent, almost from panel to panel, not even page to page.
Yeah, if it was page to page, I could understand that a little better, but it's almost like Greg Land just snuck into LaRocca's, you know, studio and finished off a couple of pages for him.
Yeah. Maybe he partied too hard over the weekend. He's like, I gotta get this done. Who knows?
I don't know. But yeah, hopefully it ends on a nice note next issue, and we'll revisit it with either House of X or Powers of X.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our other book?
That sounds good.
This is Sea of Stars number 1 from Image Comics. I did not pre-order this. I read the press PDF of this.
Okay.
I was was curious about it when it came through the solicits, but not enough for me to say, you know what, yeah, I'm going to get this.
Yeah, and Jason Aaron's one of my favorite writers, so I'm on board. But I forgot that he wrote this in conjunction with Dennis Hallam, who is Dennis Hopeless, the same guy we've always read. I guess he changed his name to his real name for whatever reason.
Oh, interesting. I just roll with it.
Yeah, Dennis Hallam is Dennis Hopeless, the guy who we've always read.
Interesting. Okay, hadn't put two and two together on that one.
Yeah, I guess it was a pen name. Maybe he was embarrassed to write comics. I don't know what the heck happened. But for a while, I started seeing Dennis Hopeless Hallam. I was like, what is that? And then I realized he changed his name.
Huh.
Whatever.
Whatever works for him.
Yeah.
Basic premise here is you got a dad who works as a pilot for a space shipping company. He's got a long haul, couldn't get somebody to watch his kids, so he's got to take his kid with him. They're yep. out in the middle of nowhere. Things go wrong. The ship is damaged. He's got to rescue his son.
Yes. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. And we're done with our review.
Well, I wanted to set the scene because
yes,
a lot of the first half of this issue was setting the scene of the dad, the kid's bored, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Frankly, a little bit of a whiny kid, but okay, whatever. But then we get to the point where things start to go awry. I appreciated the fact that this issue got past that point and had enough of, okay, the dad's trying to do something about it, whatever. I think a lot of writers these days would have ended on the something's going wrong.
Yeah, I could see comics ending with that big two-page splash where you have a creature.
Yeah.
And that I could see ending there with the ship and the creature, that very first two-page splash. And I'm like, you know, to be continued. And I'm glad that he didn't do that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely to their credit. What bothered me a little is I felt that they had established that this was a main shipping lane. It was like the safest place they could be. And all of a sudden, they're hitting unknown vessels, creatures that have never been seen before, all kinds of just craziness.
Yep.
It's like you're on a cross-country trek in the U.S. and you encounter the Loch Ness Monster, you know, Sasquatch and something else, you know?
All at once.
And I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah, the chupacabra included.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's true. Like, they're like, and the kid was bored. And I started thinking about it. You know, technically, imagine we're on a space flight. Unless you are flying close to a black hole or close to a planet, if you're just out in space, it must be boring just seeing nothingness and stars the entire time.
You've got spaceships and you don't have an autopilot for the boring parts?
You would think so. Just put yourself into like some kind of hypersleep or go back and spend some time with your son, you know, enjoying some of the things that are on board.
Something, yeah.
But yeah, no, it's like he's literally sitting there having to steer. Get to the back, kid. Have fun.
Then with what happens to the kid, frankly, they kind of lost me a little there.
Oh, yeah. I have a hint. I have a few hints about stuff, but it did kind of lose me as well. This doesn't read like a Jason Aaron book to me. It reads more like a Dennis Hopeless book or a Dennis Hallam book to me.
I can see that. I can see that. This is not what I would have expected from Aaron.
Yeah, it does not read like Jason Aaron. The only thing, the creature that we see in here, we have seen that type of creature in Thor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the connection from Aaron. But when I read this, it doesn't read like one of his books because I'm so, I don't want to say used to it, but I'm so attuned to his writing style and the way he writes. I'm like, this feels more like Hopeless or Hallam. I keep calling him Hopeless now.
Yeah, when we hit the bit with the kid and the condition he's in and what's going on there, I'm like, is this really happening? Is it not? And neither answer is good for me.
Yes, because I'm thinking there's almost like three takes you can have. One is adventurous. One is kind of a sick, demented type thing. I'll explain it to you later, the things I had. And one is just whimsical. And I'm like, I don't know which one I would want it to go down that I'm thinking, you know, things that I'm thinking could be happening.
I'm leaning towards either we take it at face value, in which case I understand where they were going, but I have some issues with it. Or we can't take it at face value, and I have some issues with that just on principle.
Exactly. Because if you don't take it at face value, because when I first read it, I'm like, okay, what's really going on is this. And I'm like, well, maybe they're really trying to say it's this. So depending on which way they go, it can be a very different story. So I'm still kind of unsure of the direction right now.
Yeah. If it had been a more of a you know, he's just a space pilot. He's got his kid. An accident happens on the thing, and he's got to rescue the kid. And it's almost like a, what was it, the Gravity movie or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, if it was something more like that, then, and there's no these crazy aliens and monsters and that kind of a stuff, I might have been more likely to stick with it.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
But it's just so many fantastical things are happening. And when you start with an onboard, now you've got this wild adventure. Come on.
Yeah, it almost gets a little like Middle West with Scotty Young. It almost felt like that later on.
It just, I was hoping for a more sci-fi story. This is getting more fantasy.
That's exactly the bait and switch, I guess you could say. And that's what's weird, because it came off as a more, at the end, I felt like it was going to be, when I was buying it, I was like, Jason Aaron writing sci-fi, I'm on board, mm-hmm. because he's going to do some cool stuff. And then when I read it, I was like, this doesn't feel like Jason Aaron, and it's getting very whimsical to me. And even the art style is very whimsical. And I'm like, now it could still be good, but it doesn't feel like what I was originally signing up for.
I can understand that. Whimsical is a good way to describe some of this. It's not bad.
No.
It's just not a story that I really feel I need to follow.
No. It's almost like it's written for an all-ages audience, which isn't bad. I mean, but it's not something I see Jason Aaron writing. It's very weird. Very weird to me.
All-ages audience, but skewing down a little?
Yes, skewing down quite a bit, I would say.
Because I think they're trying to get the kids will find this exciting.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe if you have kids, it'd be a good book to read with them. But this issue almost left me feeling like I did with Middle West. Middle West is fine, but Scotty Young, he writes in such a way, and the art is in such a style that even though maybe it's not a young reader type book, it feels like you're reading a young reader book, and that's not necessarily what I'm into. Here I'm at 46. I can read it to some degree, but not all the time.
No, I understand what you're saying there. If this is in your wheelhouse, it's worth checking out. If it's not, it's not. I don't regret having read it. I wasn't bored by it, but I also don't regret not having pre-ordered it.
I can understand that. And by the way, me saying all this stuff, I enjoyed the book. I didn't dislike it at all. It's just, it felt so different from what I signed up for.
Yeah. And I think some of that is how they solicited it. I
mean, yeah.
This was billed as a science fiction series.
Yeah. And then you feel like you're reading almost like a 10-year-old fantasy book.
Yeah. And again, nothing wrong with that. But maybe if they'd set the expectations better with us, we might have been more prepared for that.
Yeah, I was expecting something with a little bit harder edge.
Yeah. Again, I thought some of the art was good. Not a bad read. I'm going to go with a B- on this and not going to be picking up more.
Yeah, I went with a B, and I think I've pre-ordered the first three issues. And I'm going to see it out through the first arc and see how I like it. But if it's not really a Jason Aaron book, I'll probably jump off. Because I like Jason Aaron. Dennis Hopeless is hit or miss for me. Some of the stuff I really like, some so-so. And this just, I don't know what it is. It just felt a tiny bit off to me, but it wasn't bad. I gave it a B, and we'll go from here.
I can understand that.
So, one thing I wanted to ask you, now that we're done with our reviews, by the time this goes out, which is next Monday, let's see, that'll be the 15th, is it okay to talk about the Walking Dead stuff? Not what happened, because I haven't read the comic, but what's happening with the franchise? I don't know.
I don't know either. I know a lot of people are going to stop reading it after 193.
Yes.
I think it was a divisive issue in that respect. I do have some thoughts about it, and to discuss them is spoiler-ish.
So it's tough. Okay.
Yeah, let's give the listeners a chance to read the issue, and then when we record after Comic-Con, either that first week or the one after,
we'll talk about it then.
Maybe do that as kind of an informal kind of bonus issue type thing with some spoilers, because there's something I want to discuss that to me impacted what I thought of 193.
Okay, cool. I'm on board for that. I think it'll be, you know, a cool thing to do.
Remind me, because I'm certainly going to forget.
Okay. Yeah, me too. My memory is probably worse than yours.
I don't know. I don't know.
So, anyways, did you get a chance to read your comics?
I have. I've still current on my reading, which is surprising. I will be getting behind from this point forward because I'm still starting to gear up for San Diego Comic-Con. By the time this goes up, actually, Comic-Con will be starting another day or two. The stuff I read this week that was good, I enjoyed Star Trek Year 5. Let's see what else. Ignited, I think they're doing some great stuff over there.
Yeah.
I had a couple of titles end this week.
Oh, which ones?
Final issue of Adventures of the Super Sons.
Yeah.
Age of X-Men Prisoner X, along with all the other Age of X-Men stuff. What else? I thought there was one or two other... Final issue of Wildstorm.
Oh, okay. So now you have some room to add some more, or you can just enjoy what you're reading right now.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot jumping onto my pull list at the moment, so I need to take a look at what I'm getting and if there's other stuff I should be getting.
Definitely. Now, what are your plans for Comic-Con? I figure we can talk about that because we're recording this a day early from our normal recording. We're recording this on a Monday. It's July 8th. This will be coming out a week later, which I guess you'll already be in San Diego.
I will either be in San Diego or getting to San Diego. Either that Monday or Tuesday, I'll be in San Diego.
All right, cool. So what are your plans?
Well, I've gone through the panel listing. They put that up over the last couple of days. Typically, San Diego releases that information 2 weeks prior. So on the Thursday, 2 weeks before the show starts, they'll put up the Wednesday, Thursday, and then on Friday, they'll put up Friday's panels, that kind of a deal. So I've gone through, I've figured out pretty much what I want to do each day. And this is all subject to change based on Phase of Moon, Whim, and one or two scheduling conflicts I haven't resolved yet. But let's see, Thursday, there's an Advanced Coloring Techniques I want to go to. At 11, at 1 o'clock, there's a Stargate Command celebrating Stargate Atlantis' 15th anniversary I might go to. 2 p.m., How to Color Comics with, I think that's the Hi-Fi Design people or whatever. They do a good panel. Cool. But at 2:30, there's the Art and Magic of Comics Lettering with Comics Craft Richard Starking, so I may go to that. Don't know. 4 p.m., Hasbro's Power Ranger panel. Definitely try to make it to that. 6 o'clock, I may go to the Ultraverse panel they've got. Curious about that. I may not. Just depends how I'm feeling and what my dinner plans are that night.
Cool.
Friday, there is a dynamic story creation. Don't tell your story. Show it. This is by, I think, Maxwell Alexander Drake. I may have the name wrong. He's doing another one on Saturday. I actually caught part of one of his panels last year or the year before, and I talked with him one of those years. He's written a couple of books about writing, and he's a compelling speaker. He's got some really good stuff. I actually made it through part of one of his books before I got sidetracked on other things. I do plan on going back to them. They're on Kindle Unlimited, which certainly helps.
Nice.
So looking forward to that. It's at 10. So I may or may not make it, depending how quickly we get to the convention center and how crowded it is, that kind of deal. Let's see, Friday at 11, Future of Storytelling at noon, Exhibitors of Comic-Con, 2:15, Zag Heroes Miraculous, that's the Ladybug and Cat Noir series.
Cool.
3 p.m., Breaking into Comics, 4 o'clock, Behind the Scenes at Comic-Con. Now, you'll note, I've got a lot of things scheduled.
Yes, a lot scheduled.
I'm not going to make it to all of these, but I try to have something at any given point where if I just, damn it, I'm tired of walking the hall floor, well, I'll go to this room and sit for an hour.
Yeah, that you just go in, sit down, enjoy yourself, and take a load off.
Exactly. And others may come up that I put on the list and take off. So this is just what I've put on the thumbnails so far.
And does your sister, does she go to the same panels and everything that you do, or do you guys go your separate ways? Or
typically we go our separate ways. Sometimes we'll both go to panels that we're interested in, but it's always fun in the evenings because when we get back to the hotel, we pull out the microphones and the recorder and talk about our day. And it's, you know, I went and did this. Well, I was doing this at that time, or, you know, that kind of a deal.
Exactly. So that makes it pretty cool.
Yeah, she's got her own interests, and there's just a lot going on. Sometimes we do try to meet up just to, you know, make sure the other one hasn't, you know, keeled over or something from exhaustion. Because there's just so much going on.
There's a ton. And do you meet any of the famous people? Do you go around to the booths and meet the people, get signatures or anything like that?
I'm not really one for autographs. My sister's a bit more into that than I am.
Okay.
And I'll go and talk to various people. There's certainly some people I'm planning on chatting with this time around, some that I've met before, some that I'm looking forward to meeting for the first time, and just know through either email or other online stuff. It's just there's so much going on at Comic-Con, and I always make a point of trying to walk the hall floor. And it's huge. It's about the size of like 8 football fields. So that takes some time to do.
And sometimes it's just too much overwhelming. And you know what? I'm glad that you organize and do all that stuff, because I literally, two times I went to cons, you know, big cons, I just go there and I didn't plan anything and I just walk around and then I'm like, what's to do here? And then I get tired and I end up bailing early. And I literally should just make a list of all the stuff going on, because I don't even know the panels that are going on. And then I hear everyone else talking who's went, like you. I'm like, you know what? I should have done some of that stuff.
Well, and I'm going to make another pass through this list and highlight the ones of these. No, they're worth making a point to be there and do. Others, you know, if I miss it, I miss it. Who cares?
Cool. Yeah.
I've still got Saturday and Sunday to go through, so give me a sec. Let's see. Saturday, 2 at 10 a.m. I've got to resolve this one. There's dynamic story creation, point of view. Again, the same guy I was talking about for Friday. But he's opposite how to absurd scientific advice for common real-world problems. That's the one I'm more likely to go to.
Yeah.
Because that's the guy who does XKCD.
All right, cool.
So it's one of the few webcomics I follow. And it's the guy's smart and has some interesting stuff, so I may go to that one.
Okay.
11 o'clock, how to make comics from start to finish. That sounds good. 1 p.m., and this is one my sister may join me for. Don't know, haven't talked to her about it yet. But George Takei from Star Trek, They Called Us Enemy, is going to be doing a panel on his graphic novel.
Oh, yeah, and I did pre-order that. Did you pre-order it as well?
I did.
I'm looking forward to that.
I am, too. I'm very curious. I've heard him talk about this subject of concentration camps or internment camps or whatever quite a bit, and I know he's passionate about it, as he should be, having been in one as a young child and such. It's not one of the best moments in American history, but it's also one that we really cannot afford to forget.
I agree. So I'm so looking forward to reading that graphic novel.
Yeah. 2:30, sales for comic publishers. It's how to get better sales. So, okay, curious. 3 o'clock, becoming a world builder, how to start making science fiction and fantasy comics.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a process junkie, so those always appeal to me.
Yeah.
5 o'clock, everyone's a critic, being a journalist on an online age. May or may not go to that one. It's opposite at 5:30, Ignite with Humanoids, H1 stars.
Cool.
And I'm enjoying what they're doing with the humanoid stuff, so I may go to that one.
Awesome.
And then Sunday, not a whole lot. There's a panel at noon for Inside the Comic-Con Museum. Curious about that. They've had the space for about a year now, and it's not going to open next year, but the year after.
Okay.
They are going to have the museum open during Comic-Con, and I mean literally during Comic-Con, the exact same hours as the exhibit hall.
Awesome.
Well, not really, because it's a bit of a hike.
Okay, it's too far.
Let me put it this way. Barrio House, which is a new venue they've opened up for this, is a 10-minute walk. The Horton Grand Theater is about a 10-minute walk, and this is over in the museum's over in Balboa Park.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
And that's nowhere near the convention center.
Yeah, it's not far at all. You have to take a taxi or something.
And I don't think they're going to be having shuttles to either Barrio House or the museum. Hopefully they will, but I don't know.
Yeah, good luck with that.
But I'm curious about the museum. Got mixed feelings as to whether it's a good idea or not.
Okay.
2:30 Comic-Con now. They're doing a series of panels, basically celebrating 50 Comic-Cons. And then at 4 o'clock, the ongoing decision to produce digital or print content.
Oh, that one should be cool too.
Yeah. So they've got some interesting panels. I was frankly not overwhelmed by the selection of panels this year. Typically, I have a lot harder time whittling it down to this kind of a list.
Oh, so, but how many typically do they have at the same time? Do they have like 5 or 6 panels going on at the same time, or?
Usually a dozen or two.
Holy mackerel. So that's a lot.
They usually have at least 17 tracks going, and they stagger some of them. So any one panel can knock you out of about 2 dozen other panels.
That's insane.
It is. It's thinking if you go, I'd have to remember. I don't remember if I put up the panel schedule when I did some in-depth Comic-Con coverage about 20 years ago. Because they had just about as many panels back then, too.
Wow.
But I had it to where you could, I had it to where I did a grid for myself so I could figure out what conflicted with what.
Yeah. And I think last year, didn't you take those 360-degree photos?
I did that last year and I believe the year before and have never had time or a good plan for organizing those photos.
I was literally going to say, we still haven't seen those.
I am taking a newer 360 camera this year that works a lot better, and I am going to take one or two other cameras and such with me.
Oh, okay, cool. And hopefully you upload them.
The trick is to organize them first.
Oh, okay. I'm just giving you a hard time.
No, it's fair, because if you go back to 2001, 2002, I had a much bigger camera. I was much younger, more energetic. I took thousands of photos of Comic-Con.
Wow.
And I mean that very literally. If you go to the website, if you go to convention coverage, or I forget the exact phrase, but comic convention, something to that point, you go to the San Diego Comic-Con or Comic-Con International 2001, 2002, you can get to where there's the exhibit hall, there's a map of it, it's clickable. You click on the DC booth, you can see all the photos I took that were of that booth.
That's awesome.
And I've got that for every booth.
So it's like pick your poison.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I think I went on there one time and I found the pictures, and I looked at some of the pictures one time, but I did not look at all of them for sure.
It's hard to do that.
Yeah, it's a ton of stuff.
And I did play around a little last year or the year before with how to get 360 photos onto the website. It just comes down to how to put them in a meaningful way to navigate through, you know, literally thousands of photos.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm excited for you. I hope you guys have a safe trip out there, and I hope you guys enjoy yourself. Because I think last year you weren't as excited as you were in previous years, so hopefully this one's better.
Hope so. It's one of those things that a lot of what I used to get out of Comic-Con just kind of isn't there anymore.
Yeah, it's changed a lot.
I mean, I used to be able to come out having discovered a couple of new comic titles and stuff, and these days either I know about them or I don't, and I don't care.
Well, and also the booth space has got to be so expensive that those guys, you know, selling their comic and showing you the new thing they created, they probably can't afford to go there and spend that kind of dough.
That's definitely a problem, and some of the ones that do often don't have new material.
Oh, same stuff.
There's one, and I don't want to mention which guy it is, but he gets maybe an issue out a year at best.
Good Lord. A year.
I think that's pushing it, because I don't know that he's had more than one new issue out of the last 4 years I've seen his booth.
That's kind of rough.
I can't sustain any story momentum that way.
You know what? Not to get off topic, but one thing I was going to tell you, now that we've talked about all your Comic-Con stuff and everything like that, I've been noticing, and I don't know what it is. It's probably just my age. It's very hard for me to read comics right now. You know, like comic issue, and let's say you're getting 150 titles spread out over a month, or remembering this story thread to that story thread, what's going on in this book and that book, that when I finally get caught up in my comics and I read graphic novels, they're so enjoyable because you get so much story in one big chunk. I love reading graphic novels.
I can understand that. There comes a point where 20 pages is not enough to give you some story momentum.
Yeah, and it seems like the more comics you're reading, the harder it gets to piece those together in my older brain. You know, my 46-year-old brain, it's a hard time to remember. Sometimes I get into it 5 or 6 pages, and I'm like, oh yeah, now I remember what was going on. And that's just so frustrating.
I think that's a factor not only of the reader's memory, but also of the writer's skill.
Yeah, and we're lacking that right now, unfortunately.
If you have not read Love and Capes by Tom Zoller.
I have it, and I haven't read them. They're in my stack to be read.
I don't think you'll be able to do this, because I think once you read one, you'll just plow through them.
Okay.
Which is a good way to do it. But it came out quarterly.
Okay.
And I was able to keep the story momentum from issue to issue.
Wow.
He kept it accessible. He had good ways to get you into the story. And he's just, Tom Zoller, he's one of the people I always make a point of chatting with whenever I'm at a convention he's at. He's a great guy, talented artist, great writer, and just has a good sense of what makes for good comics and such. He's just a fun guy to chat with. And I really think at some point he needs to write a book on how to write comics.
Yeah, he is actually a really good writer. I've loved everything that I've read that he's written. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So, yeah, unfortunately, we have the majority of writers who do not make it very accessible. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a mistake. I think sometimes they just don't realize some of the mistakes they're making, and they don't have an editor to point them out and say, you know, you might want to do something about this.
Yeah. Hey, this might be a good idea. Yeah, they need a Perry Olson.
Or did you think about this question?
Yeah.
And if you choose not to answer it, so be it. But yeah, maybe if you think about it, it will change how you write this issue.
Exactly.
So.
So. Hey, well, I hope you guys have a great trip, and I really hope you and Kay have a blast, and hopefully you find some new stuff, and if you do, let us know about it when you get back.
Hope so. We'll be recording every night when we get back to the hotel. Sometimes we talk for half an hour, sometimes we talk for an hour or two, and I'll edit those once I get back and try to get those up shortly after.
Yeah, sometimes you guys sound exhausted. Sometimes you guys...
Often we are.
Oh, it was because, a long day.
this is one of the aspects about Comic-Con I both love and hate is preview night.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't start until 6 p.m. It ends at 9 p.m. And then people will say, oh, it's first night. Let's go have dinner. Okay, so you're getting out of the convention center at 9. You're doing something for dinner. Maybe you get done by that at 10:30. Then you get back to the hotel. Oh, wait, we've got to record. And get up for Thursday morning that starts at like 9:30. And we're staying at Liberty Station, which is a little ways. It's on the other side of the airport from the convention center. So it's about a 15, 20 minute at least drive to go park and then the hike into the convention center. So yeah, there are times where we're tired, but yeah. if we let it go too long, it's like you lose, you know, what you did that day.
I can imagine.
So I'm looking forward to aspects. I'm looking forward to seeing what Hasbro's got in terms of Power Ranger stuff. Certainly curious about the DC booth this year. It looks like it's a big change for them moving in with Warner Brothers and such. Over in the corner of the convention hall. And certainly, if there's anybody listening that's going to Comic-Con and wants to meet up with me, email me beforehand, because we'll just bump into each other. It might happen, but it's at the size of the convention, it probably won't.
Yeah, you pack in 100,000 people. Good luck. And when they happen to be walking past where you were, you might be in one of those panels.
I've had times I'm looking for my sister and we're like on opposite sides of a booth and can't find each other.
Yeah, so good luck finding them there. Let them know.
Yeah, but I always love talking to listeners and stuff like that. So yeah.
Cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Blue Baron number 3, Headhunter number 1, and Startup number 1, all from Sit Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.